This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight. That is the March 2018 graduating class of mental health clinicians in Liberia. We'll have more on how they are making a difference in serving their communities. Also, exiled Burundian rights campaigners in Paris call for a forceful international response against the Bujumbura government ahead of a controversial referendum. And a new study says conflicts and disasters forced 30.6 million people from their homes around the globe last year. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Ahead of a controversial referendum in Burundi that could extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's term in office by more than a decade, rights campaigners in Paris called for a forceful international response to restore democracy and stability and end the crisis gripping the Great Lakes country. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Exiled Burundian activists and the Paris-based FIDH, or International Federation for Human Rights, are sending a strong message to world powers. It's time to impose more effective sanctions and other measures on President Pierre Nkurunziza and his government.
Et moi je dis qu'ils arrêtent ces déclarations, mais qu'ils passent à l'acte.
Burundian journalist Elise Ngabire, who said she fled to France in 2015 after receiving death threats, says the international community must take measures that will force the ruling power into negotiations to end the crisis. That call comes as Burundians vote Thursday on a proposal to extend the president's term in office from 5 to 7 years. That could allow President Nkurunziza, already on his third mandate after a controversial 2015 election, to stay in office for another 14 years. Rights groups say violence that erupted with that 2015 vote has killed more than 1,700 people and uprooted another 400,000. Burundi's bishops, the United States and the European Union and others have denounced violence, intimidation, and other excesses targeting opponents of the proposed constitutional changes. Burundian authorities deny they target their own citizens, claiming exiled activists are spreading propaganda. FIDH Deputy Africa Bureau Head Charina Jirolin also issued a warning to international powers that helped secure the 2000 Arusha peace deal that helped to end years of civil war.
There is a risk to actually reduce the whole credibility of the involvement of the international community in peace process in itself. So in this context and in this region where DRC is at risk, we have the situation in South Sudan, the situation in Central African Republic. So there is really a need to have a sort of a consistency and coherence.
Avec ce référendum, il y a risque que le pays retourne.
Burundian activist Pierre Claver Bonimpa fears the fallout of the referendum, warning Burundi could again tip in to civil conflict. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
A recent graduating class of mental health clinicians in Liberia is ready for the challenge of helping people recover from the physical, psychological, and emotional impact of years of civil conflict and the devastating effects from the Ebola virus. Both crises have left their mark in many ways. Through a program supported by the Carter Center, this particular class will focus on treating children and adolescents. In part three of our series from Liberia on mental health programs, I attended the graduation ceremony in Kakata, Liberia.
I will respect the needs of the mental health clinicians,
in whose steps I follow,
and share my knowledge.
These are the voices of Liberia's child and adolescent mental health clinicians taking their oath of service before embarking on their work. The 19 graduates include registered nurses and midwives who have dedicated themselves to the treatment of mental illnesses, the most common global health issue. This particular class will work in clinics and schools to focus on troubled children and adolescents. The six-month training program is part of expanded efforts to fill the gaps in mental health treatment and support by the Carter Center in partnership with Liberia's government. In June 2017, then-President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf signed into law Liberia's first Mental Health Act to improve care and prevent discrimination against those with mental health problems. The Carter Center, founded by former President Jimmy Carter to support health and peace projects around the world, has been working since 2010 to train more than 230 mental health clinicians. The graduates are enthusiastic about facing their new challenge. Patrick Sicklow is an RN and registered midwife. He said the additional training in mental health illnesses will help him respond better to patients' needs because underlying problems could stem from family issues or a marital crisis.
It's so important to function as a mental health clinician because most especially at the antenatal care department, we have our pregnant women coming and some of the problems. You have to do some biopsychosocial investigation because you see a lady comes already in third trimester. She's depressed. And actually, when you do your investigation, indeed, you will get to know that there are some underlying causes.
Mary Kamara, another member of this graduating class, is also an RN and midwife. She works as a child survival focal person. She said her training has changed her attitude towards people who suffer from mental illness.
I'm kind of proud of myself. I took a bold step in learning about mental illness because from the beginning, we felt that these people, they will never get well. Maybe because it's their own illness or their own doing that got them in the street. But now I have gotten to know that it was important that we learn about mental health because most of the time when people come to the clinic, we just look at the physical illness and we offer medical treatment and that's it. But you find out that most people come to clinic with one condition over and over and over and over and they are not getting better. So we have learned that we look at them holistically to find out what is really happening.
Adolphus Ye is the Margiba County Health Officer and one of the trainers for the Carter Center Mental Health Program. He said he is proud of the new graduates' commitment to learn about mental illnesses.
I feel really great that those group of nurses and PAs and midwives having gone through 6 months of training, and that training was based here in Margiba with our support. Having graduated 19 of them, it's a very great feeling that we are able to send out 19 clinicians into the health system to be able to identify and manage mental health cases among adolescents and children. It's a real great feeling.
The new clinicians are trained to identify and treat some common mental illnesses such as depression and some forms of psychosis. They are also trained to treat epilepsy, which Ye says is very common in Liberia.
They are all based at health facilities, so we always be working along with other clinicians, non-mental health clinicians. So if they have a physical condition, then of course they will seek medical attention for it. And if they meet conditions that require specialist attention, then will be referred to our mental health hospital in Monrovia.
Mental health clinicians have opened 14 practices in Liberia's prison system, treated refugees from the Ivory Coast conflict, and provided support to families affected by Ebola. Now they're ready for new challenges. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Hakata, Liberia. A new study says conflicts and disasters forced 30.6 million people from their homes around the globe last year, with sub-Saharan Africa accounting for more than a fourth of the total. The report by the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center and the Norwegian Refugee Council says 5.5 million people were internally displaced in the region by conflict in 2017. That's nearly half of the global total of 11.8 million last year, which was nearly double the worldwide total for 2016. The DRC was hardest hit with almost 2.2 million new displacements. The NRC says the jump is an eye-opener and that more must be done to prevent prevent displacement, protect people, and find long-term solutions. 3.6 million people were ousted from their homes last year in sub-Saharan Africa by disasters. Globally, the total was 18.8 million people. The new additions bring the global total of those displaced by conflict to nearly 40 million. Well, the 25th New York African Film Festival kicks off today with a festival program that reveals the depth of African cinema. It features more than 70 films from 25 nations in every genre. VOA's Adam Phillips reports.
That's music from Borders, a film from Burkina Faso that premieres in New York tonight. It's about four women traveling by bus across several West African frontiers. Other offerings include a Tunisian documentary about one of the core fathers of Pan-Africanism and a Zimbabwean drama about a 19-year-old woman who returns home to claim her land inheritance. Festival founder and director Mahan Bonetti, who's originally from Sierra Leone, says there's something intangibly yet vividly African about each of this year's selections.
It's just atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It's color, it's language, it's intonation. There's a flavor to it in Africa, and I think it comes from us being storytellers. It's a living thing. You dip your foot in that stream and the water feels different.
Traditional culture and the human heart clash in Still Water Runs Deep, a short film written and directed by Abisi Akami, a young Nigerian-American. It centers on a stern family patriarch who searches for his wayward son, who's gone tragically missing from the village. The character reminded Akami of her own highly traditional father.
You have to take emotions out of it. Even when you face hard times, when you're tired, when you're sick, you must still do your duty as a man.
Usually he's in control of everything. He's the leader of his flock. But this time when one of the sheep kind of goes astray, it's something that he just can't control. And how do you really deal with that as a man, as a father?
Well, Akami is proud that her film was selected by festival producers. She says the film's enigmatic storyline has gotten mixed reviews back in Nigeria itself.
I feel like audiences in Nigeria like the kind of happy kind of story with a happy ending. And this is very independent and raw. Nigerians, they do not like negative images coming out of the country. It's a very communal society. And if they see something that they don't like, they'll tell you, don't do that.
Mahan Bonetti welcomes, even relishes, controversies over the festival's films. She says audience members' views often run counter to type.
I see that when people leave the theater and the white person is arguing that, you know, we're patronizing Africans, and the African is saying, no, that's how it is. And then everyone goes off and has a drink.
Some films explore the African immigrant experience in the United States. Yusuf Kapadia directed Mamadou Warma, Delivery Man, a short documentary about a young man from Burkina Faso who works as a bicycle delivery man in New York after being shot by Burkina police during a student protest. One of Benetti's personal favorites is Purple Dreams. It documents six disadvantaged African-American teenagers in North Carolina who find purpose and redemption in a local theater group.
When I throw my mojo down on you.
My dad, he wasn't around when I was younger. He was shot.
My father is in prison. He went away when I was two.
All my life I had to fight.
That's a very triumphant story. It's about young people facing so much adversity, but overcoming that adversity through culture. It gives them that hope.
Bonetti acknowledges that putting on a film festival this complex about both Africa and the African diaspora is a constant challenge.
But what is beautiful is that these filmmakers keep giving us a face and a voice. And you're so proud to show the work because they're so talented. I'm beaming because I'm really happy to share this quality of work with our patrons here in New York and the world.
The 25th New York African Film Festival opens tonight and will run through May 21st. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Exiled Burundian rights campaigners in Paris call for a forceful international response against the Bujumbura government ahead of controversial referendum. Mental health care is on the forefront in Liberia as healthcare workers receive additional training. And a new study says conflicts and disasters forced 30.6 million people from their homes around the globe last year. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Two international human rights groups claim a parliamentary unit controlled by then-Gambian President Yahya Jammeh summarily executed more than 50 West African migrants in July 2005. Human Rights Watch and Trial International say the migrants may have been mistaken for a group of mercenaries who Jammeh believed had been sent to overthrow him. Eight beaten and slashed bodies were found, and others allegedly were dumped in wells across the border in Senegal. No arrests have been made. Jammeh left the Gambia after losing the December 2016 presidential election. HRW and Trial say they interviewed with 30 former Gambian officials and the only migrant to escape the massacre. They claim evidence in the case was destroyed. Jammeh has denied knowledge of any extrajudicial slayings, and an investigation concluded the migrants likely were killed by rogue elements in the military acting on their own. HRW and Trial say the junglers, an unofficial paramilitary unit drawn from the State Guard who answered to Jammeh, were responsible. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has signed the Computer and Cyber Crimes Bill 2017 into law. Among other things, the new law makes it a criminal offense to publish so-called false information, with hefty fines and prison terms for those found guilty. Critics have denounced the law as punitive and retrogressive and meant to suffocate the freedom of expression. Ryle Ambor reports from Nairobi.
The law does not spell out what counts as false information, saying only that a person who intentionally publishes false, misleading or fictitious data or misinforms with intent that the data shall be considered authentic commits a criminal offense. Individuals found to violate the law could face a fine equal to $500,000 or up to 2 years in prison or both. John Musheru is Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Information, Communication and Technology. He said his ministry spent 2.5 years getting the bill through Parliament before it was signed by the President.
There was a push to get this bill in place, especially with some of the nuisance and nuances that come in with the use of this technology. So some people feel sometimes insecure because of cyberbullying. Some have lost money. Others are writing fake news about them.
Musheru argues the law is both necessary and constitutional.
This technology is transforming our lives. We must have laws. As a country, we're moving definitely in the right direction. Technology is at the heart of the things that we'll be doing, and we must have the right laws in place. I mean, the Constitution provides very clearly the freedoms of media. So this law has not gone against any of the constitutional requirements that we have already in place.
Robert Elai is a Kenyan blogger who has been arrested several times for comments on social media. He considers the law too vague.
The freedom of expression under Article 33 of the Constitution already clearly states on what you can be charged with, on what is not covered by freedom of expression, propaganda for war, hatred, causing disharmony, you know, things which constitute a crime. I don't know why they needed another law, a cyber bill, to create certain laws to handle freedom of expression. You know, when you talk of fake news, this is an issue which is still under discussion. No state has clearly stated on what is fake news. Something which is fake to me, it might not be fake to you. And some people brand everything they don't agree with as fake news. The law is not fair.
Alai believes aspects of the law will greatly affect freedom of expression in the country.
The real media now is the individual who is holding a phone. That's the media which is going to be affected. That's the media which is trying to be intimidated through this law. Because if you try to say that you post a fake story, then you're going to go to jail for 2 years or be fined 5 million shillings, you're not helping the country.
The law covers crimes such as cyber espionage, identity theft, and child pornography as well, mandating long prison terms and heavy fines for those found guilty. The new law also allows authorities to search and seize stored computer data and to collect and intercept data in real time. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Saleh coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is Shaka Saleh, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, as Burundi prepares for a May 17th referendum to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's time in office, it battles allegations of harassment committed against perceived opponents of the referendum. Critical times in Burundi on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa presents a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control.
It's difficult to recognize Ebola because the signs, sudden fever, diarrhea, vomiting, are shared by other diseases. It's quite difficult for anyone, except a healthcare worker, to say definitively, yes, it is Ebola, or no, it is not Ebola. So if you have sudden fever, diarrhea, or vomiting, and you have been in direct contact with someone who is sick, you should go to the health center, because no matter the cause, you can receive help there. And remember, with the right information and together with our healthcare workers, we can protect ourselves from Ebola.
That was a message in the public interest from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, brought to you by VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa. Your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.